This week on Two Legs, we are discussing best and worst McCartney album covers.
Kenny and I pick our top five least favorite and favorite McCartney album covers. Stay tuned. Hi, McCartney fans, and welcome to another edition of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. We are a Paul McCartney talk show mainly dealing with Paul's solo career. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hanyadi, and as always, I am joined by my backwards traveler, my friend, my co-host, the one and only Andy Nichols. Andy, how are you doing, my friend?
I went to the store and I bought toilet paper and I didn't get mobbed.
What? Fact. You had toilet paper?
Fact.
Oh, good for you.
I'm doing well, Tom. Thanks for coming on again. And here we are again, churning out another episode.
It's big news. You know, just like everything else, everything's getting postponed or canceled. And unfortunately, the Fest for Beatles fans, that was postponed as well. I was really looking forward to hanging out with you, Andy, and all my Talk More Talk co-hosts and all of our fans, and getting excited about meeting a lot of people. But unfortunately, that wasn't going to happen. I mean, we had some plans set up. We had, you know, we're going to check out Strawberry Fields, do that, and then, you know, just have a good time. And that's what I was really looking forward to. I know that the guests weren't as exciting this year as past years, but
still would have been a good time. I think when Lapidus announced that was like the first indication to me that, like, okay, I guess I'm going to start. This is getting serious. That's how I took it.
Yeah. And then a day or two afterwards, I mean, we saw all these shows start postponing. I know Pearl Jam. And then I saw a Facebook post saying that Live Nation was planning on, rescheduling all of their shows.
Yeah, every Live Nation show. Yeah.
Exactly. So I'm kind of glad I'm not at my last job right now, because I would have a lot of free time on my hands at the moment. And, NBA, baseball, you know, postponing their season, putting that on hold, so it's funny, David, who co-hosted the show with me before, he messaged me earlier saying that there was live bowling, actually, but with only like 20 people in the audience.
Wow. So, hey, that's something live to watch, right?
Exactly. And Guns N' Roses did their show last night in Mexico. Which I'm sure they probably were told or advised not to, but they went ahead and did it anyway. So, yeah.
Well, these are strange times, and those of us that are music aficionados like us and connoisseurs of all these things will certainly have a lot of extra time to dive deep into our musical libraries and listen and explore and check out new things and check out music we've overlooked for a little while. And it's the reality of the situation. What else can we do? You know, so it affects all of us. And luckily, you and I are part of a group of people that, are big music fans. And, I'm sure we'll be able to keep ourselves occupied with the news of that and revisiting topics in the past and checking out all kinds of different things that we might have missed upon. That's just trying to take the optimistic viewpoint of it and, taking the time to maybe analyze things and check things out that maybe, we've put on the back burner music-wise, or maybe different artists you haven't heard in a while, or something. Just something to just kind of keep it fresh and keep on keeping on,
Yeah, and I'm happy that you were able to see Steve Hackett. Was it 10 days ago now, a week ago?
Last Saturday.
So I'm glad you were. I'm glad that was able. You were able to, see that, and that didn't get postponed. So.
No, that was very fortunate.
Probably the last live show you see for a while.
I think so because he along as you mentioned, any live artist was canceling shows, and he had a couple more dates in South Jersey after I saw him, and those ultimately got postponed too. So what was that, March 6th or 7th? So luckily we snuck that one in, and we just take it day by day now.
Right. Before we get into today's topic, we're going to do our five favorite NECA albums and our five least favorite NECA albums, or MACA, I should say. I got to say MACA because, I've been there's a few times where I haven't pronounced it correctly. But actually, I just say we're going to do our five favorite McCartney album covers. We're going to do our five least favorite McCartney album covers as well. Before we get to that, I just want to say that don't forget this book is out, Ted Montgomery's the Paul McCartney catalog. I'm into it almost halfway through. Been pretty busy with work, and then doing Talk More Talk also. So a little slow in the process, but I'm going to get through it and hopefully do a small review on our Facebook page and on Amazon probably. I'm enjoying it right now. And, he gets right to the point. There's really no fat at all on the book. If it doesn't need to be said, he doesn't say it. So, good on him. Check it out. Paul McCartney catalog by, Ted Montgomery. There was a book that we just found recently, a couple weeks ago, that went under the radar. You didn't see it, I didn't see it, and that's called McCartney Solo. See You Next Time. So this came out in what, 2009, was it?
2009, yeah, by Mr. Mark Bowen.
Yeah. Right, we're trying to, his email address was in here, and it looks like it's no longer in use. So trying to get a hold of this guy Mark Bowen and see if we can get him on for an interview as well. It looks like it's in the same style as Ted Montgomery's book. Looks like it's a opinionated book. Excuse me, talking about all the albums, all the songs.
Yeah.
All that good stuff.
Check it out. I've thumbed through it a little bit so far. I haven't read it yet. Like I read Ted's properly, but nice. Yeah, and it looks like a nice piece of work. Like I said, it is a little outdated. It's only through 2009. But, it's a very similar format. He just gives his opinions on all the songs. Interestingly enough, and it's got a halfway decent bibliography at the back. It's got a published date of February 29th, 2020. So I'm assuming that, these were kind of like when you order them, they get printed kind of thing.
Right.
So, it'd be nice if we get more.
I mean, that's
on.
All.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how a lot of people do it now when they're self-publishing their books, because it looks like this is a self-published book. I mean, I haven't seen a publisher's name on the book.
No.
So.
Yeah, this is definitely a self-published. Yeah.
Right.
For sure. But yeah, no.
Cool.
Listen, it's a topic that we like to research. And again, 2009, right around that time frame when this stuff started popping up. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. All right. So let's get to our topic. Let's do our least favorites first. Get that out of the way.
Our least favorites first. We'll do 5-1, right?
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be in any order. This could vary for me. And then so let me just say before we get started that these are just our opinions. They're not written in stone. You guys are going to have your own opinions. I posted this on our Facebook page earlier today and got some comments on there. And, a lot of people have chosen like a similar amount of albums, favorite and least favorite. So it was kind of interesting to see what people were picking. And I'm sure you guys will find what we pick to be interesting as well. So we'll take it away and we'll start with our least favorite. And for me, I'll start with, where am I going to start? I'll start with this guy right here.
Oh,
off the ground. Now, when I think of body parts, I don't think of feet, you know, to be honest with you, and calves. This image right here, I really like. You know, if they took all the feet off of it, I think it would be a little bit more, you know, a little better of a cover. Not one of my favorites. Interestingly enough, this photo was taken by Clive Arrowsmith, who will appear on the other side. So you'll hear that name again for the favorites, for the favorite covers.
Yeah.
And, you know, for sure. But yeah, this was my, it's one of my, top five least favorites.
Okay.
So
I'm very curious to see how many we have different, and we, you know, in our different columns.
Yeah.
I'm very curious. Right. So, okay. So that's your first one. I ranked mine, best and worst. Here's my number five least favorite one right here. Now, that does not indicative of the music on it. Okay?
Right.
Tremendous music. Just not really a fan of the cover.
Gotcha.
Looks very, you know, thrown together, 80s.
Yeah.
You know, there's some of them, I mean, some of the ones in the 80s were not great anyway. I mean, there were some great ones, which we'll talk about, but some of these just seemed like very rushed affairs. Broad Street seems like it was. Again, not indicative of the music on it, but and it just has that cheesy, you know, he's got the cheesy, you know, 80s perm thing going on in the back. It's like, hey, you know. Gatefolds are nice, but I don't know. This one never really did it for me.
Right. Yeah, and I'll say my piece about that in a minute.
All right. Your turn.
My number two on the list, we're going to go with this guy right here.
Oofa.
Driving Rain. it's photos taken from his Casio wrist camera watch at the time.
In a urinal, I believe, too.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Definitely got that that image of seeing what Austin Powers after he gets unfrozen going to the bathroom. That's definitely first thing that comes to my mind when I see this. But some of the images are interesting throughout the booklet of Driving Rain. I just don't think it's it works as an album cover. But it's just frustrating of an image. I mean, it's not complete, you know, really.
No, I think I remember, too, that's like 2001. So the advent of, like,
right. Camera
phones and watch phones, that's, like, brand new. So he's, you know,
trying out. He's a technology fan, so I get that, you know.
Right.
And it was the latest thing.
Right.
But, you know, image-wise, I just didn't think it was cool.
It's curious enough, if you remember, when they repackaged the album in stores, they threw the slipcover over it of him with the car. So,
yes. Yep.
You know, in an effort to boost sales, I was like, well, we better throw a better picture of Paul on there than him just sitting in the urinal taking a leak.
Right.
Okay, number four for me, least favorite album covers, would be this one. Speed of Sound, which may be popular, designed by Hypnosis, and Hypnosis was a tremendously famous group of guys that put albums together in the 70s for Pink Floyd, and Yes. I believe they got the guy's name was Poe, Aubrey Powell from Hypnosis. This one, you know, just very, again, looked kind of very lazy, you know, and I think these letters were just put on outside of one of the theaters in London, right?
Well, it's like it's up in the marquee lights. I think was the thought on that.
To me, it just lends itself to this album's very much rushed production. It wasn't made with the care and time that Band on the Run and Venus and Mars went through it. They did it right. Getting ready for the tour. You know, very democratic album, giving the lead vocals to Cher. So the whole thing, we're going to just throw the letters on the cover and call it a day, seems to kind of lend itself to the whole rushed affair. So that's why it's been one of my favorite ones.
Yeah, and you know, I think if any of the albums scream a group photo, I think that that's the album, because it was a group effort. I mean, not all of them have lead vocals, like you said. And, you know, and there's also multiple Denny Lane compositions on there. And I like the back better. I think that would have made a cool album cover right there.
This would have been a better concept. The faces. Would have been really ballsy, too, to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and I think they took these images, incorporated them into the Silly Love Songs video with them going back and
video.
Forth.
Yep.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah, again, Hypnosis,
It's very Hard Day's Night in a way, too.
Very much. Very much Hard Day's Night. You know, but I guess he just figured it was easy enough. You know, Hypnosis was pretty hot there in the 70s, so he went with them. And, you know, not one of my favorites, but
right.
That's number four for me.
Cool. Right. All right. My number three would be this guy right here. Mm. Again, you know, in a way, I think it's kind of rushed in a way. What I would have liked to have seen is to have this image.
That should have been the cover. Yes.
Flying in the middle, know, you can have all of this stuff there. But also, I think this image would be a lot better if it was, you know, superimposed or whatever, cut and paste, you know, in there.
Agreed. I actually had that album cover hanging in my classroom, but I have the gatefold open.
Ah, yeah, it makes more sense that way.
Yeah, you can see it. You can appreciate it much more. Again, that one almost cracked into my almost made my least list. I couldn't put it in there at the rank with the rankings of the other ones. Again, 80s, you know, some of the 80s stuff just seems very lazy, you know, and it wasn't much thought that went into it, you know, on some of them, you know, but again, if he had been on the, cover with his face, you know, maybe it would have been a little bit better. Number three for me, oofa on this one. See, we're getting to some real bad covers now. Bad, just bad covers. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Again, not indicative of the music. I like the album. A chair. Come on, man. With the chair on the cover. What? Why you gotta throw a chair on a cover? No picture of Paul, nothing, and then a chair on the back. Like, really? Come on, man.
Right.
Laziness on this one. I mean, great music, good album, but a chair. I mean,
I think he did some kind of interview or some kind of talk of what that chair was supposed to represent on the cover. But since it wasn't one of my picks, I didn't do any more research on it. But yeah, I mean, definitely people that were posting on our Facebook page, you know, did mention Memory Almost Full as one of their least favorite album covers.
You know, it could have been Heather, you know, get the boot. You're out of here. Gone. Gotta go. Stop sitting in the chair, Heather. Get out. You know, that's what it's really, you know, come on.
Yeah.
Tough one for me.
Yeah. Maybe. And I wonder if that chair was in one of his homes, you know.
Maybe. You look actually closely at it. It looks like there's like a pattern on it. It's hard to tell in the sunlight. Mm-hmm. It looks like there's some kind of pattern on it. I do know that the title Memory Almost Full was like an anagram for...
From his phone.
From his phone, right? But
yes.
It meant some kind of message to Linda or something. Do you remember that?
No, I just remember him talking about how, you know, he got the name of the title from a phone.
Maybe one of our viewers. I read this. I can't remember it, but it was some kind of coded message with Linda in the title. I got to look it up afterward when we're done.
Right.
But I do remember that. It came up on his phone, but it also, there was some kind of coded message in these letters that spelled out something regarding Linda. We'll look it up, check it out later.
Cool.
What do you got?
All right, my number four is the one that we're going to be agreeing on is this guy right here.
Yep.
Give my regards to Broad Street. Now, I realize this is a lot of this was the poster, for the film, the poster art for the film.
Yeah.
Right. However, you know, I think myself, I would have taken the image of Paul out and just focused on, you know, this character and, you know, put it more in the middle. Yeah, exactly. And just put it more in the middle of the album.
That might have been a better cover.
Just let that
might have been a better cover, yeah.
Right, and I think maybe it would have made more people a little bit more intrigued about what the movie could have been about. I don't know. I'm not saying that it's going to make the movie any better than what it is.
No.
But, you know, maybe they could have, maybe it would have made them a little more curious about the film.
Maybe.
But the image, you know, Paul, you know, it's not really that great. It's not really that great of an image either, you know.
I get it. He's looking at the guy stealing his tapes. I get it, but, you know.
Right.
You know, doesn't do a whole lot for you, you know?
Right. No, it doesn't do anything for me. But yeah, I think Terry O'Neill was responsible for this, for that album cover.
Is that right? Yeah. Okay. Do we cut out or no? Oh, no, we're back. Okay.
No.
All right.
You hear me?
Yeah, I got it. Number two on my list. Rough one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No.
Again, just, you know, laziness, man. I trying to be hip, modern, okay, new, I get it, you know, on the back. Just now, I Egypt Station, I thought was a great cover, but in terms of new Paul McCartney album covers, come on, Paul. Let's do better than lines on a cover here. Come on, man. No, I just it could have been, you know, I don't know what he was going for here. You know, I didn't even look it up to see who it was designed by. I didn't. Do you know?
Right.
Do you know who did this one or no?
No, I don't, because it's not on my top five least favorites. So I didn't look into it.
Yeah.
Myself.
Just looking at the credits real quick here. Don't see anything on here but the sleeve on here at all. Let's see. Oh wait a minute. Here we go. Cover inspired by Dan Flavin, with special thanks to Stephen Flavin. Logo and cover concept, Rebecca and Mike. So, Rebecca and Mike, you struck out on this one with me. Sorry.
Rebecca and Mike. Oh, Rebecca and Mike. Come on, guys.
Again, not indicative of the Paul. If you're watching this, you're not. Not indicative of the music. I have about five copies of it. I just don't like the album cover.
I enjoy the colors on both sides myself. It's not an album cover that I hate. It might be, this is one covers that you've picked that maybe I might be on a disagreement with you about.
Yeah.
But I don't love it, but I definitely could understand why people might not like it.
Sure.
You know. So my number five, my last one, my number five, might be, you know, some people might not, you know, grasp why, but it's the album, it's the album that we just talked about, and that's London Town. And I just feel like that this is just a cut and paste job, you know.
Yeah,
these
you
images
said that.
You know, when we were doing research on this album, I saw a lot of great photos of these three together. This is not one of them. You know, there was a lot of really cool photos of them. And there's that really cool photo of Paul jumping up that you used for your Backwards Traveler, you know, image, which I thought was really cool. But there was a really good couple really good photos of them, you know, on the boat, you know, during the photo shoot.
Yeah.
Which I thought, you know, might have been a lot better than this image. But
yeah.
It just doesn't feel like, it just doesn't feel like they're all three, the three of them that are there. You know, it just feels like the images were taken from different photos.
Honestly,
you know,
maybe a better cover would have been maybe just them not on it, just the tower, the London Bridge with the letters spelled out. That might have been a cooler concept, maybe.
Yeah, you might have a point there, or just a map of London.
I do like, one thing I always liked about that album too, about that album cover was the letters being in different colors. I always dug that for some reason.
I had no problem with that whatsoever.
But it does. Now that didn't that one didn't make my best or worst list, because as anybody who knew, I do love the album a lot.
Right.
I don't have it on the list. That could have been a cover, maybe, you know.
But it's got the same feel. I mean, it's got the same feel that, you know, each picture was taken from a different photo and then copied and pasted on, you know, on the back.
I do like the grayed out black and white feel, though, on the front. I've liked that. But it does have a copy and paste thrown right on it, you know. Whereas Back to the Egg was much more of a, you know, attempt to actually do a real photo concept, you know.
So, yeah. Right, right.
So that's gotcha. That was your number,
okay.
That was your number five?
That was my number five, yep.
All right, now this is my least favorite one of all time, and Tom already touched upon it, and, you know, we'll just show it up again. This is the vinyl version. Putrid, Putrid. And then the back with the 35 little megapixels that are pixelated to all hell.
Right.
Images here, you know, a dog, somebody on the beach, a mixing console. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of stuff going on here. I mean,
right.
it's just, and again, a double vinyl album with no gatefold. They're just both thrown in here like this.
Okay. That's going to be my next question.
Yeah, no gatefold on this one. Again, vinyl pressed in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, very hard to come by. I bought this as an import from England. Actually, the price sticker is still on it. I bought it in December of 2001 for $29.98.
You know, I'm sure that was probably a great deal because I'm sure that's probably going for megabucks on eBay.
Yeah.
You know, now.
Yeah,
because
it is.
I don't think they pressed a lot of copies of those.
No. No, they didn't. And I had a really good store in New York City that I used to go to that got all these in. And that's where I got a lot of the Beatles anthology on vinyl. Anything that came out Beatles related from the UK, this guy always got it. So I made sure I always hit him up. And again, you know, it's McCartney, so I snapped it up. But I mean, in terms of album covers, oof, rough one. I remember Larry King asking about the cover. And that's when he told Larry King in the interview that he just did it, you know, he was in the bathroom. And He took a picture of it, but again, not indicative of the music, although it's not my favorite album, but God, this one takes the cake, Paul. Sorry. Worst one for me.
Understandable.
Not a good one.
All right. Right. So you're a shrink wrap guy, aren't you? You're a fan of keeping your LPs in shrink wrap?
Well, like some of them, yeah, like the Wings of Speed of Sound one, like I'll just cut it to get it out, but I'll keep the shrink wrap on it. Yeah. Yeah, I won't take it all off. You know, if I could just split it down the middle and then keep the shrink wrap on it. Yeah, I like to do that. Yeah. You?
Yeah. No, I'm not a shrink wrap guy. I'm you know, hype stickers don't do anything for me. But it's funny because we had this conversation with Joe, me, Mr. Mayo about it as well, because he's a shrink wrap guy. I mean, a lot of people in the vinyl community are shrink wrap people, and you know, I'm not, you know, picking on them or saying, you know, don't do it. I'm just saying I see no reason for it. I mean, especially when you got the album cover in the plastic that you could put the albums in, you know.
Right, true.
I just don't see,
I think,
you know,
one of the reasons why I like to keep the shrink wrap on them is because I wasn't around when these albums first came out, so I didn't have the experience of like actually going to the store and buying an original copy of Wings at the Speed of Sound and taking it out of the shrink wrap like my father did when he bought his copy, you know. So I kind of like having that feel of like, hey, this is new, and I'm going to try to keep it as new as possible. That's trying to kind of keep that consumer-esque type feel of the album, of like of the newness of it. Hey, this was actually sealed at one point, so... I that's kind of just why. I mean, you know, again, with all the different versions that have come out, I mean, this copy here is these 2018 remasters came out on Capitol again, which, you know, you've got them, you've got the...
Well, that's the copy I have as well.
Right, I've got the Hear Music one, which, was it Hear Music? The archive issue.
Concord.
The Concord one, which I also have, but again... and actually, that's only three sides. Actually, there's not enough. There wasn't enough material for a fourth side. You know.
Right.
So again, I like keeping it on. You know, in general speaking, you know, especially if it's new, because so many albums that you go through, if you go to record shows, they're beat up to all hell and they don't have them. So it's just a personal preference.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool.
On to the good ones.
On to the good ones. Okay. Why don't we start with you this time?
Okay. I think we're both gonna have this one on that list. There is one album that you had in your list of your worst that I have in my best.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. Can't wait to see which one.
Yeah. So here's I'm gonna go five through one, ranking fifth to first. Here is my number five. A bit obvious, and I know we talk a lot of shit on this album, but it belongs in the best of. That's Band on the Run.
Yeah.
It's got to be in there, as you mentioned.
I think it's one.
Yeah. Right. as you mentioned, Clive Arrowsmith took the photo in in Austerley Park in London. And that's been, and all that footage is well documented on the archive stuff. You can see all the photo shoot with everybody at Austerley Park. Again, call it Paul's version of his Sergeant Pepper with getting all kind of famous people on it, you know, except these were all, these were all living. They weren't wax figures. it deserves to be in there, not just in terms of his best album covers. I think this is one of the iconic album covers of all time. You could show this album to the average Joe, or the average person in this case, and they would know it. They'd say, oh, yeah, that's Paul McCartney. So, iconic album cover, Clement Freud, the son of Sigmund Freud, Christopher Lee, John Conti, you know. And if you have that 25th anniversary edition or the archive, you can hear the interview with all the people and how they shot it. Classic album cover used. I mean, he uses it in the concerts now when he did it in the heyday with Wings, where he'd show the video of them all doing the thing. And the back cover, it lends itself to the whole concept of being a band on the run, the passport photos on the back. I mean, even the typed memo, you know, that was all staged. The whole concept, the whole package of this album, cover, songs, content, is great. Does it get a lot of flack because it's overplayed? Yeah, it does. But it still doesn't detract the fact that it's still one of the best of all time.
Exactly. The album cover is probably one of the most iconic, you know, record covers of classic rock, you know, album covers of all time. I mean, in my opinion, anyways.
Yeah. What do you got?
All right. My number five is this guy right here. I think it's really cool.
Nice.
I love the image. He's still youngish. You know, he's still youthful looking. I think the part I really dig is the two shadows on both sides of McCartney. I think it's, you know, kind of almost as if there's two Pauls going in two different directions, you know, his band direction and now, you know, maybe his solo direction. I think it's a really cool concept. You know, Linda took the photo and, you know, really interesting thing. If you have the archive release, give me a second here to find it, is this image right here, which makes me think that it, at one point it could have been thought of as a band project.
With
all of them, you know, doing the those images as well,
right?
You know, which was kind of interesting once when I went back to you know, to look at you know, and read some of the text on the album cover shoot, and I just found it really interesting that you know, maybe, you know, they could have gone back and, you know, had the band's input and you know, it could have been a Wings release, but
it could have been. They were still technically together at that time. They still had those rehearsals in October of 80 for all that tug of war material. So they were still at that time in the summer of, I mean, that album was produced in the summer of 79. So they were still very much a band, right?
Mm-hmm. Still very much a band. Absolutely.
Great choice, Tom. It almost was in my top five. If we were going to do 10, it was definitely going to be in my top 10. We scaled it down to 5, but that's a great choice, and I am in total agreement upon you. One of his better album covers for sure. And it just the fact that it's, you know, here he is 10 years later, you know, and they both McCartney and McCartney 2 bookend each other so well. And I think he was aware of that, and it's, you know, it's just him 10 years later, a little bit older, a little bit weathered, and doing his own little funky thing. And that cover of him looking like whatever is kind of just like summing up what that year for him ultimately really was.
Right. Yeah, you know, I think it would have been really cool if, you know, if the way it was supposed to go wasn't the back cover of McCartney with him with, was it Mary?
Mary, yeah.
In his jacket. Excuse me. And, you know, if that was like supposed to be the first, the cover of it, and if it would have been really cool then if he would have done the same kind of almost image thing with James, you know, even though James would have been, you know, maybe, you know, 2.5, 3 at the time.
Right.
You know,
James does sneak into the album picture somewhere. He's seen on the sleeve. He's sitting there tugging at his dad's shirt. You know,
exactly.
So that might have been a little. That might have been a little subtle drop of the same kind of concept. You know, probably not, but I mean, probably just a happy coincidence. But cool.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. All right.
My number four. Okay, was in one of your worst album covers, but I have it. It's one of my favorites.
Wow.
It's one of my favorites.
Okay.
Probably for sentimental reasons, because I was becoming a fan when this album came out. I was, I think I was 12 or 13 when Off the Ground came out in 93. So this is the vinyl edition, which is gatefold. I just liked it. I mean, so it's probably more for sentimental reasons than a piece of artwork. But the feet, you know, which you kind of thought were like a little lame hanging there, maybe a little bit. But for me, what sells it is the photo, which is, I think, the you know, his farmland in Kintyre, Scotland. That's,
okay.
That's what this picture is. And again, done by Clive Arrowsmith, who did Band on the Run. So
yeah,
both of Clive's, two of Clive's works are in my top, are in my top five.
Yeah, see, and it works for me as a just an image, you know, without the feet, you know, dangling, that the legs and feet or whatever dangling down on the top of the photo. If you remove that, then I feel you've got a classic McCartney album cover.
Yeah, you just do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the feet are a bit over the top. And again, on this vinyl version, you've got the white border that's not really present on the CD version. Right. And again, probably more for sentimental reasons, because it was a new release at the time and I was totally energized by it. But yeah, it's,
Understood.
Yeah, it's a top fiver for me.
Cool.
What do you got?
All right, next up, Ram On. I love the image. I love the artwork. The Linda photo, you know, photo with McCartney, art around it. I love what the album represent, or the album cover represents. Paul ramming on.
Yeah.
Ramming on with his career. That's why I kind of wish that the album title was called Ram On, not just Ram.
Yeah.
But pushing
forward.
Yeah. Exactly. And just a wonderful image. You know, I also love the image of John, you know, poking fun at it. You know,
on the Imagine album. Yeah.
You know, but this is, I think it's real cool. Like I said, if the word Ram wasn't on there, I think you can still get a sense of what, you know, the album, you know, could have been called. You know, maybe, but yeah, Ram is my number four.
Nice, and then again, he's got the image of the Beatles on the back, you know, screwing each other, which,
yes.
Again, he was, you know, he tries to dress it up now, you know, some odd 50 years later,
right.
But he was pretty hurt with that, with the end of that. Yeah, there
yeah.
it is,
mm-hmm.
And he subtly was, you know, that whole, what's what that record was, and I know he likes to dance around it now, but. You know, he was hurt,
right.
and he let it be known in his music and in the artwork on the album. The whole concept of Ram, like, he's hurt, and there's all those stages of grief, right? You know, sadness, anger. You know, and that was the stage of grief where he was really pissed off, and he was just going to get his feelings out there on record, musically, the cover, everything, and I think that cover epitomizes that period in his life, and a great one.
Yeah.
For sure. I totally agree.
Right.
Although it didn't squeeze into my top five either. I had it right on that McCartney 2 bubble, also the same
thing. Right.
Okay.
No, I like the fact that we're a lot of our picks have been different. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I think we're gonna agree as we get to the top of our list here though, I think we are. Here's my number three. Now my number three and my number two are both done by the same artist. So that might give you a little hint there. Okay, my number three is Flowers in the Dirt. Okay. 1989, cover painting by Brian Clark, who also did some work for Paul. Mm. And again, probably for sentimental reasons. Again, I was a younger child when this came, but I got it new when it came out. And totally being obsessed with the concept of Flowers in the Dirt, literally, you know, being... you know, told across the album cover jacket, you know, and it was such a different, fresh approach too, coming off of like, you know, Broad Street and Pipes of Peace. Press to Play, although not in my top five, or was a classic, you know, tasteful cover. This one was just so fresh and different because he wasn't on the cover, and it just felt fresh, and to me, it still feels fresh. You know, 30 plus years later, it's just a nice piece, you know, of artwork on the back, you know, the flowers, just kind of, and the painting, like a big mural, you know, between the front and the back, just one kind of big mural concept,
right.
no band photos, no anything, just, you know, here's where I am now. It's 1989, and I'm putting out a new product. I hope you dig it. And this, I think the cover,
right,
other than the music being great, is one of the reasons why it's so tastefully remembered now.
Brian Clark will make an appearance on my my top five here in a little bit.
Yep.
So, but you're... my number three is, I'm sure, a pick that people might scratch their heads with, but I think it's brilliant, and it's Wildlife.
Interesting.
Again, it's a cover that speaks of the album and, you know, where he's at that time. You don't need Wildlife on there to, you know, explain the cover, in my opinion. I just dig the laid backness of the record. I dig the country aspect of the record. The fact that the doves, you know, that are around on the front and back of the cover, I think is really, really something special. And I think it says by Gordon House, I think did the photo, the original photo, yeah. Here. But I just really dig it.
The cover didn't
need to say, I know that it's not a favorite.
Right. The cover.
I know it's not a favorite album.
Right.
You know.
I was going to say the cover doesn't need to say Wings Wildlife on it, but the record company sure wanted it to say Wings, right, Wildlife, and they slapped the hype sticker on it.
True. That's true.
You know?
Absolutely. I mean, you probably would imagine that, you know, you see a picture of Paul McCartney and his group. I mean, then there, you know, it should be self-explanatory. But yeah, I mean, I can understand why they probably, you know, the studio or the, you know, whoever in charge,
EMI wanted, at the time. Yeah.
You know, the EMI hype sticker. Yeah.
EMI, right. Exactly. That was Fall's first attempt, really, to say, this is a band, I'm calling it Wings, and his name is not on the, doesn't bear on the album cover title at all, which the record company, right, insisted, right, with the next release. Red Horse Speedway and Band on the Run are both credited to Paul McCartney and Wings, not, right,
McCartney and Wings.
Right.
Right.
Which,
and then since you say Wings, too, and I think which makes the doves on the cover so much better as well, you know, I know you can't see it from here, but, you know, there's doves all or birds all around them, in that photo, which I think even makes it, you know, more powerful of an album cover.
I think the album cover lends itself to that rustic feel that the album has. Now, the album was done in 8 days. It was rushed, but I know that. But when you look at the album cover, them all sitting there in a pond, you know, in the forest, whatever, and then you listen to the music, you know, juxtaposed with the music and the album cover, it lends itself. Like, you could have called it Wildlife, and, you know, them hanging out in the studio or walking down a street in London wouldn't lend itself to that concept, right? So,
right.
Wildlife, yep. they're out in the outdoors. It works as a concept, and really admirable pick of your top five. Brave, you know, not many people would do that. So that's pretty cool.
Mm. Yeah. Cool. All right, your number two.
My number two. The aforementioned Brian Clark and Tug of War. And this is the 2018 EMI, actually, we'll call it Universal now, Capital, single edition,
right,
repressing. Again, with my shrink wrap on it, but the album opened. So much going on with this photo and this time in his life. One of my former professor in Liverpool, Mike Brocken, gave a lecture on this album cover one time. And it's really why it's now in my top five. Because when you analyze it in context of Lennon's death, you know, that's what he told us in the lecture. When you look at it, you know, this is, you know, it's him looking visibly shook is what it is. You know, looking at it like, you know, this is his first musical statement post John Lennon's death. And this is the album cover he chose to go with. He's not smiling. He's not walking down the street. He's not in the park. This is a man with a very, very sensitive, pensive mood. You know, with his hands over his cans, you know, his headphones. You know,
earphones, right?
Cans, that's what they call them in England. I think that's what this album cover says in it. I mean, I think that's subconsciously. You know, I don't think he would never say that, but I think subconsciously, that is what is going on in this photo. And again, painted by Brian Clark. And if you've if you've ever gone to MPL Studios in Soho in London, when I've never gone in, I've walked by it. There is a big mural in the office that has this design, not the photo, but it has this kind of blue and red, big kind of like style design painted by Brian Clark on one of the walls. When I went in 2003, I saw it when I walked by. I could see it. There was a receptionist, and there was a big mural, and it was the painting. It was this painting by itself. No words, no references to Tug of War. It was just this picture adorned on the wall. So if that doesn't tell you that, you know, what he thinks about the album, I don't know what does, you know?
Right.
So I think, awesome. Yeah, I think very tastefully done. And as we know, this is, you know, top tier all-time McCartney that he's ever done. But again, yeah, I think the cover is tastefully done by Brian Clark and painted. It's not a photo. I think he painted it on there. But that picture of Paul, in my summation, is his subconscious response to John Lennon's death. And I think that's what this album represents to me.
Right.
Yep, that's my number two.
Well, we are in agreement. So we're going to have our first, you know.
Oh, we sync up there. There we go.
Yeah. I agree with you 100%. It's a kick-ass album cover. I love how, you know, one side is predominantly blue, the other side is predominantly red, with a little of each color, you know, blending in on each side. I mean, you know, you explain how you feel about this album cover. I also get a sense of isolation from Paul, you know, on here as well. You know, I love his facial expression on here, like you had said, and I like it's just like a man and his music. I mean, what is he doing to help comfort himself? He's listening to music, probably what he's working on. But you know, this is how he's getting over his grief is music, and I think this is well stated here on the cover, and it's well done. The painting is excellent. I would love to, you know, be able to check that painting out, like you said, you saw, you know, in you know, the MPL lobby, whatever. But it'd be cool if it's still there, because it's a wonderful piece.
It really is. It's very tasteful record.
Yeah.
Like Band on the Run, and you always see like top 10 lists. You know, Band on the Run is always up there. Tug of War is up there. But I think it goes beyond the music. When you look at the total package of a production, right? Cover to cover, you know, the cover. What does the cover mean to you? What does it represent? What does it say to you? Then there's the music.
Right.
You know, that's why I think what kind of gets lost in the digital, and certainly back in the CD days, is, you know, the ability to take an album and analyze it, you know, in cover to cover. Pull it out. Look at the lyric sheet. Study it, you know? I mean, yeah, you know, you can do those things with CDs, but I think it's a lost art form, you know? And these albums, especially the really better ones, the Band on the Run, the Tug of Wars, you know, not only is the music kick-ass great, you've got a cover that makes you think. And
right.
You know, you can tell that a lot of effort and care was put into creating these things, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah.
All
right. Good call.
Time for my
good
number
call,
one.
My
let's see if we
yes.
let's see if we agree on our number ones.
We're not going to. I can tell you that right now.
No.
No, we're not in agreement with our number one.
Okay, you know that already for a fact.
Yes, I do.
How do you know what mine is?
Well, I know we're not in agreement because my number one you've already had on your list.
Oh, okay. There you go. Okay. All right.
Yep.
Well, here's my number one. Okay. Maybe a bit obvious, maybe not, but this is my number one favorite McCartney album cover of all time. Boom.
Oh, interesting.
Venus and Mars, yeah.
Okay.
And again, which I believe won an award for best album cover of the year in 1975 or 6. Again, cover photo shot by Linda. Again, concept, packaging, everything. God, this album gave you tons of goodies when it came out. In May of 75, you had two posters, stickers, you know, a lyric sheet, loads and loads and loads of stuff and goodies in this. And then, you know, sometimes I wonder if it would have been a better album cover without the words across the top and just the two planets there. Maybe Maybe it would have been a better concept. It might have been very 70s looking. This pressing that I actually grabbed off the shelf is a pretty rare one. It's actually... It's a Columbia Records issue, which you don't see those too often. When Paul was briefly on Columbia,
right,
with the red label, It's been a hobby of mine to try to grab up all those, because he was on Columbia for only a certain amount of years. So,
right.
Obviously, the 80s albums that came out when he was on Columbia are pretty available and a lot of quantity. But the pre-Columbia, like the ones that are available on vinyl, are hard to come by. And I snapped this one up. And again, it's from the 80s. So no inner lyric sheet with this one. Just a standard sleeve. Of course, with the gatefold, with wings.
I like that shot a lot, actually.
Yeah, which is a nice shot. And I'm not sure where that was taken or who took that one myself. But I know Linda did the cover. And again, it screams 1970s. It's always been a favorite one of mine. Concept album, right? Venus and Mars from start to finish.
Right.
And again, more along the lines of bang for your buck. Gives you something visually interesting to look at. And really well done. If you've ever seen the original advert for the album, which was a commercial you can find on YouTube, was also included on the archive edition. It starts off with the planets, right? And then it goes to, pool. And you see and they're playing pool with they become, playing billiards with it. So, again, right. maybe not an obvious choice. But for me, it's my number one. I like it the most. And that's me.
Yeah, it's interesting because you said it was a Columbia pressing. I'm kind of curious if mine then is a Capitol pressing right over here. As you can see, to my left, probably your right, I have it up there. And the hype sticker is on the actual album sleeve. It wasn't on the shrink wrap.
No, it was pressed on, yeah.
Maybe I have to take that down and take a look to see if that was
That's probably an original pressing. And it also marked the first time that... I believe at that time he was still signed to Apple, because there's no out there. This wouldn't say that, but because it's MPL. But I know he was hell bent on not having any Apple records, any references on any of his. That's why he had custom labels for everything from Wildlife on. So I do think by the time of May of 75, this still technically I think was an Apple release. Because I think it says an Apple record on it, but he used the old 50s style throwback that said Capitol on the top of the. Again, we're talking of the American pressing. So I think he was still signed to EMI at that time. So I think the next album after that, Speed of Sound, would have been different. But although maybe I don't know. Maybe one of our viewers can correct us. He may have been totally independent by that time. But I'm not sure, but I think you definitely have an original one because the original pressings do have the sticker stamped right on it.
Right.
Again, loads of goodies thrown into that album, which he kind of did later on in the 70s. You got posters in London Town. You got a poster. You got a poster in Wings Greatest.
Wings Greatest. Yeah.
Yeah. He certainly gave his fans value in his albums in the 70s. There, with throwing all kinds of goodies and stuff in there. So that was just my that's my number one.
Cool. All right. Well, my number one was, I believe, your number five, which,
there you go.
Fan of Run. And, like you said, we give this album crap a lot, overplayed. Is it overhyped? Maybe. Is it his best album? Maybe. Is this going to be the album that he gets remembered for as a solo artist? Probably. Whatever you want to say about it, it's a phenomenal, phenomenal album cover, and it's my number one, and it has, everything I think you need. I think it's exciting. It's interesting. I love, the headlight there. I love the fact that he's got his friends in there with them. As you mentioned it, by Clive Aerosmith, who I think, brilliantly captured that image, and, it's really cool. I dig it. The making of documentary that's on the, the archive series is really fun. You get to see them, working on the image, and, Paul talks a little bit about, the making the album cover. So, it's great. I mean, it's iconic. It's up there with the great album covers of all time in classic rock history, I believe.
Dark Side of the Moon. Yeah. If you ever look at any of those books, best album covers of all time, Dark Side of the Moon, Band on the Run, it's in there. It's in there. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
I think,
like I said, we do tend to crap on that album a lot, but if we take our inner McCartney geek glasses off and step back and look at it, do we tend to skip a lot of the overplayed stuff, namely just the title track? Yeah, but it's still a damn good record, you know?
Yeah.
It is.
What were some of your, what was your, some of your honorable mentions? So you know, like I said, we were going to do like, at first we thought, I thought maybe we'd just do like a worst to best, but I thought, that would take too long. And then maybe we'll do a 10 and a 5. But,
five and five was good.
Yeah. So what were your other top, what were your other top fives then?
So I don't have my phone with me, but I can remember. So my, in the good category, I had McCartney 2, like you.
Yeah.
I had McCartney, the first album cover, you know, the first one.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else. I had Ram. I also had Ram.
Yeah.
I had Ram in there also. Forgetting the other ones I might have had in there too. Worst ones, I had Pipes of Peace also for the reasons you stated. Just kind of a little bit of a lazy, you know, thing going on there. Also, actually, I had in my good column Press to Play, which I thought was a really good one.
Right.
And you know, and you can tell he went to great lengths to put that album together as a good package. And you know, he wasn't, you know, you can tell he took more time putting that album package together than he did, say, Broad Street or Pipes of Peace. You know, I forget the photographer's name, but he had a guy take that photo with like vintage 1930s equipment to kind of achieve that really old look. So I thought Press to Play was definitely an honorable mention. And also I had in my best also was Egypt Station, which I also think is a great album cover too, because it's one of his paintings. And I thought, and I know I kind of crapped on a lot of his recent album covers, New and Memory Almost Full, but in my opinion, he rebounded beautifully with Egypt Station. I thought that was a very, very well done album cover. And I loved how he kind of eked out promotion, bit by bit with that album, dropping hints about it, right? You'd see pictures of the train tracks and stuff like that in the promotion.
So yes.
And making us guess, like, what's this going to be? And blurred images of the album cover.
Right.
And you're thinking, what is this going to be? So I think he, you know, again, another case where from top to bottom, put together a wonderful package. And again, you can tell, in my opinion, when he cares a lot about a package, an album, he's going to go all in for it, you know, in my opinion. And Egypt Station, he did. He didn't really do so much with New, in my opinion, or Memory Almost Full, or Speed of Sound, or Driving Rain. And that's why those albums made my list for them, because I don't think he put a lot of care and time into the album cover like he did with the five that I chose. But that's just my opinion.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I had definitely had Egypt Station in my top 10, McCartney as well. I really dig Red Rose Speedway, so that was in my top 10. And one of the newer albums that I really enjoy the cover with is Chaos and Creation, In the Backyard. You know, I think that says it a lot. I mean, right there. I mean, he's in his backyard. I mean, yeah. He's a photo by his brother. Yep. You know, so I mean, that was definitely in my top 10 as well.
That was I had my top 10 also. It was Chaos again. Everything, you know, the title says it right in the photograph, right? Picture by in the backyard there on Fourthland Road, snapped through the window by Mike. Yeah, to your point, yeah. That definitely was, if we were doing top 10, that would have been in there for sure for both of us.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Cool, all right, well, another episode in the can, all right. You know, as always, we really appreciate you guys listening to us. We appreciate all the feedback, all the emails. Don't forget, check out our YouTube channel, Two Legs Podcast. Please subscribe to that if you'd like to see our mugs while we do the show. You know, we're also on Podbean. We're also on iTunes and iHeartRadio. Don't forget to check out our Facebook page, Two Legs Podcast, as well as Twitter and Instagram at Two Legs Podcast. We're there. Email us. You can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. So once again, we really dig you guys taking the time to listening to our show and sending us your feedback. So we really appreciate that. So any last comments
thanks to everybody who supports us on social media. We've got some good viewers and fans out there that leave some great feedback on our YouTube page. So thank you for those. You know, we try to be very quick turnarounds with getting our shows posted, and you know, our loyal fans that actually go out there and watch our show or listen to our show, thank you. You know, we're a few months into this new venture now with me joining, and I think this is episode 10 or 11 now, I think, for me since joining.
13 maybe.
It could be. So it's been a blast. I think Tom and I have clicked quite well. We've done a few where it's just he and I. We try to have some guests on most of the time, but we try to do it regularly, like every other week, in comparison with his Talk More Talk, which is an excellent solo podcast that he does with Kid O'Toole, Ken Michaels, and me and Mr. Mayo. So check that out also. But we're going to keep on keeping on. I know we're kind of facing uncertain times here, and Lord knows we'll have some time to crank some more shows out. So stay tuned, as Paul says.
Yes, great. And, you know, I'm grateful that you're here. I couldn't do this show without you. So thank you once again for being here. And it's been, like you said, it's been a blast. And, yeah, I look forward to future episodes of, you know, of us rambling on about our favorite musician. And, yeah, I mean, we've got a next guest. We've got a new guest coming in on our next episode, which will be Darren DeVivo, who is the co-host of Things We Said Today with Ken Michaels and Alan Kozin. So that'll be great. I won't say what we're talking about just yet, but I look forward to that in the coming weeks.
Mr. FUV himself.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
A staple,
so once again,
a staple in the New York, New Jersey radio area, which is where I'm from. So it'll be nice to meet him virtually.
Yeah. And he's into doing the video aspect of it. So,
Good. Good.
Look forward to that. Yeah. As always, thank you. And everybody out there, you have a great day and a beautiful night.